Stiles and Watkins, no Stiles today. He's enjoying a nice little vacay, much deserved, before his young child performs on Sunday in the baby races. Excited for that one. The presses are waiting for the results of that one. More specifically, if, you know, we're not rooting for it at all. We are definitely rooting for Allen and the Stiles family in the baby race on Sunday. But I will say, as somebody who does do a daily radio show, which is based on content, a lot better for content, I believe, if unfortunately Allen just doesn't win. It's okay if he gets, I think second is probably best, so he can.
Wow.
But yeah, I'm rooting for content.
Don't you think him coming in like super happy?
I also think he's
going to
lose his mind if he doesn't win. So
what about
I'm definitely rooting for
if
him.
If she does win.
It does not sound like it.
I'm definitely
first of all, what's his daughter's name? Is it Ella? Is
yes,
that her name?
She's definitely going to win. I think she, you know, Allen has been training his child rigorously.
I'd like to know what the odds are. Like, what are the lines for this? Is she the favorite?
Gotta be.
Okay.
Gotta be. There's no way anyone's putting more effort into this than Allen is.
But what if, because he said that she's a little older, right? I think she might get up and start walking.
She's going to stay planted. She's going
to
stay planted.
I'm not trying to get her disqualified.
Yeah, exactly.
No DQs here. DQ. I'm just saying that.
Would it be a DQ? Have we had that
walker?
Level of controversy? Oh,
has there been a walker?
In a walker in the baby race? Is that illegal?
A disqualification would be crazy, just in the middle of a baby race.
We got to get to the bottom of this. We got to figure out
Allen would get teed up, tossed.
That's what I'm saying. I'm rooting for Allen to kind of lose his mind just because it would be hilarious.
It turned into the travel. Like, is it two steps and a gather? Then if she falls, does it count as walking, or do you have to actually like take five steps? There's a whole thing that could come into play.
I could also see him like if his child is losing, like he might like walk onto the floor and like pick up the baby that's winning and turn it. Like I think all things are possible with Allen in this baby race. I'm very excited.
Or they win and he starts monitoring like future WNBA draft capital. You know,
she's going to the league.
He's going to lose it. If he wins, that is true. He will be, I don't want to say insufferable, but he's going to be telling us about how his daughter is a world-class athlete for years now.
D1 athlete genes.
That's
what I've been saying. D1 athlete genes.
That is an absolute fact. And Frankie, unfortunately, since we spent so much time on Allen, I was going to toss you a Yankee Juan Soto thing, but unfortunately, we're not going to have time for that, so maybe we can talk about it next time. Instead, we're going to talk about everybody's favorite subject, and that's the Kings. It's weird to call it home struggles, but, I mean, this team, for the second year in a row, has not looked good or looked of the same quality at home as they tend to on the road. Mike Brown was asked about it again yesterday in pregame. He pretty much said the exact company line we heard last year. Not saying it's not true. I just don't think any of us have an answer for it. He said, sometimes at home you kind of rely on the fans to give you energy, and on the road, you know we have to provide it for ourselves, and that's all fine and dandy. The Kings this season are 17-11 at home. That's a .607 win percentage. Last year they had a .560 win percentage, so they are technically better at home this year, but it just feels like all of the same shortcomings that they had last year at home still are. They just feel like they're there. And you know, it's been highlighted. I've got some of the games that have gone bad after the Kings' six-game road trip. Come back home, lose to Detroit on the 7th of February. They then go on a three-game road trip the following week. They struggle to beat San Antonio when they come home on the 22nd. They then play the Clippers the next game in L.A., come home and lose to that shorthanded Miami team on the 26th. They then go on a two-game road trip that they just came back from, the Denver-Minnesota. Of course, they beat Minnesota on the second leg of that road trip and then come back home and lose to Chicago. And then yesterday, they beat the Lakers handily on Wednesday and then come home and really struggle against the San Antonio Spurs, just to kind of lay it out for everybody. And that's all just this month. That is all just in the past calendar month here. Frank, like, what do you read into that? It's now, again, 2 years in a row that this team has done it. Is it actually something that you think is real, or is it just kind of a coincidence?
I mean, I think by now we can say it's pretty real, and that's unfortunate, the fact that this team has, I think, a clear home court advantage as far as atmospheres go. Like, last night was one of the loudest, I mean, I could probably name two or three more times it's been louder than last night, and that's playoffs. And the Kevin Herter shot against the Jazz. Last night, I think in that last 57 seconds, we had multiple crowd pops that kind of prove why it's a home court advantage and why they can't take advantage of that. I don't know. But I think maybe it's the mental aspect we talked about a little bit on Wednesday with Allen. Maybe it's a mental aspect as far as you jump out to these leads and you kind of feel like you're coasting. And the Kings are a good team, but sometimes I feel like maybe they get a little ahead of themselves and think that they're too good and they can kind of ease off a little bit. Mm. And these teams, I mean, you look at the Spurs last night, which you guys talked about, I'm sure, plenty, the three-point shooting, but the worst three-point shooting team in the league, they shoot 50% from or 53% in the second half. There was no slowing them down. And it was kind of like what happened at the beginning of the Laker game, too. You see them fall in these holes, but on the road, that urgency is there, and they're always fighting, and it kind of feels like they're always kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop for their opponent. But at home, you know, it's just one shoe up, and they feel like they're going to keep going. Like, that other shoe, they don't feel like it's going to happen, but, you know, there's no easy answer. I think we're all kind of trying to figure out why this team can't be dominant at home when you see the teams ahead of them, like Minnesota, Denver, Oklahoma City, these teams that are very good at home. The Kings, they feel like they're in that same range because they beat those teams, but they don't have the similar home record. They struggle, but still trying to find an answer. Hopefully they can figure out for the final 20.
The only guess that I have, and this is very much just a guess, is that maybe they're just like too comfortable at home. You know, they think that like their offense is much better at home, but their defense is much worse. And maybe they think like at some point we're going to be able to go on a run here. We're going to be able to get good energy in this building, build up some momentum. But defensively, they just don't come with that same intensity. And I think there's an aspect of when you're on the road, it's you against everybody else in that building. And you guys have to rally amongst yourselves. And again, no clue, but it's like, I guess, a working theory that will never be able to be proved. But that's the whole issue here, is that there's no obvious reason, and it doesn't make sense. Yeah. It's not for a lack of trying. Like, I know effort gets questioned, but these guys are out here trying. It's just execution.
It's really strange. And, you know, to go on to some more weird things that continue to be a trend. I joked earlier about Golden 1 Center being a shooter's gym all of a sudden. We've heard Anthony Edwards in the past talk about how he specifically likes the Golden 1 Center, you know, backboard and likes the depth perception of it. And he feels like for whatever reason, he just shoots better at Golden 1 Center. Looking at it, opponents against the Kings this year shoot 40% from three against the Kings at Golden 1 Center. Again, is that just something that's a coincidence, or is there anything that you guys see that might be leading towards that number? I will also say on the road, there's not much of a difference. Teams shoot 39.5% against teams. There you go.
They just can't defend the three, I think. But kind of going to that home thing, again, just I'm looking at the home records in the West right now.
Yeah.
The teams that have more home wins than the Kings this year, the Lakers, who are beneath them in the standings, the Warriors have as many, the Mavericks, the Utah Jazz have two more wins than the Kings. They're out of the playoff picture. The Houston Rockets, who are 12th in the West, are 21-11 at home. But then you look at the road side of things, and the Kings, who are almost on the verge of breaking a franchise record in wins. I think they're one short of tying their franchise record for road wins in a season.
Really?
Yeah, this year they have they're 19-15 on the road. They have 19 road wins. That is as much or more.
Second most in the West.
Than every team ahead of them except for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So when you look at the road play, I think that's a strength. I mean, the fact that you can go out there and be a tough team on the road. But on the other end of things, like, you want to be able to take care of business at home. And right now, the fact that you came into a game last night against San Antonio, and again, I know the NBA, number 15, the 15th player on the roster is capable of causing damage. They're NBA players, NBA talents. We've known that. We've seen it happen with the Charlotte Hornets, the Detroit Pistons, who are both missing a bunch of players. Their deep benches killed the Kings. But when you see the Kings come into a home game like last night, a game that you need to win when all that happens around the West last night, the fact that they're in a position where they're down 5 with 57 seconds left, it's definitely a daunting thing to kind of look back on. But, I mean, again, they pulled it out, and a win's a win at this point. You can't really discriminate. I mean, if it's going on the W column, it looks the exact same as a blowout. It's like in baseball how people say if you hit a little, you know, blooper to the pitcher's mound and beat it out, it's going to look like a line drive in the box score tomorrow. It all looks the same when it's in the end result.
Right, yeah, beggars can't be choosers at this point in the year, and getting the win's the important thing. We've heard of home court advantages before, but how about a home court disadvantage? Do the Kings actually have real problems playing at home? Malik Monk had some interesting things to say about the Sacramento crowd, as did Domantas Sabonis. We'll get to that next, right here on Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports 1140.
There's Keegan Murray straight away. 19-footer, it's missed. Kings are... Henry, it appears to me that they're just suddenly they've lost rhythm, and it's like everything is kind of tentative and hesitant.
Like they're playing not to lose instead of playing to win.
There you go. Backdoor cut. Quick score. Blake Wesley converts. Timeout Sacramento. Biggest lead of the ball game for San Antonio. Kings fans are not happy. Got some boos raining down now.
That is the G-Man, of course, and love the G-Man, but he put it a little bit lightly there. Some booze, G-Man says. It was, dare I say, an arena full of booze. It was pretty significant, the booing that happened yesterday. I believe it was when the Spurs went up 8 in that fourth quarter. Things got dicey, and, you know, Frank, I know you've been around this team for a long time. I know you've been to a lot of bad Kings games, more so, you know, in the 10 to 5 year range ago. And we've heard more so Arco Arena back in the day, or Sleep Train, I guess, at the time.
Power Bounce.
Might have been Power Bounce. Definitely might have been Power Bounce.
A couple
of
boos happened in that arena.
Couple games that led to some boos. And, you know, at that time, it made sense. Those teams weren't going to playoffs. Their play-in didn't exist. And, you know, they would get booed off the floor maybe a couple times a month. And now we're sitting at a point where this is the second season in a row where it seems like the Kings are headed towards postseason basketball. As a matter of fact, I think you put on Twitter yesterday, with the win yesterday, they go back to 10 games over 500, which is tied for their highest mark of the season again. So they're in a weird way, they are in the best position standings-wise or record-wise that they have all year long. And yet last night you find an arena full of boos, which I think everybody has their own opinion on this. I don't think that there is a right answer. Though did someone in the post game yesterday did say, I don't ever boo, but if I do, it's for Marvin and Buddy, which might actually be the only right answer out there, I will say. But yeah, I think everybody's got their own individual booing policy. I personally, in that moment when the crowd booed, didn't feel unjustified to me. Felt like probably the appropriate time, if any, to give those guys a boo. And I don't think it's about, we hate you guys, we feel some sort of animosity or anger. To me, it speaks to a level of expectation that wasn't met. And before we get your guys' thoughts on it, here's what Malik Monk had to say to the entire Golden 1 Center crowd yesterday after the Kings have this amazing, exciting win. Here's what Malik had to say to the crowd.
Just like we wanted it to happen. They were booing a little bit. I didn't like that. So I had to do something about it.
I know. You said that before.
I like that.
There. Malik Monk, man. Some tired legs, but you guys put it together. Talk about how that all unfolded for us.
Like I said, they booed us. They helped us a little bit, boosted our energy, man. And they just kept going.
They kept going.
The fans.
They did it here. We got a lot of games in March. You're gonna need them.
Yeah, we need them. We need them for sure.
We're gonna need them for
keep
sure.
The keep the energy up.
Yeah, like it bothers me, but it give me a little bit more energy when I step in the court.
Do you feel like it does the same to your team as well?
I don't know about these guys. They're a little weird. Nah, I just man. I think it boosts them up too, man. Because we all just feed on each other. So if somebody's down or if somebody's rolling, I think we all just follow each other. So yeah, man, we feed off of that.
Malik is the greatest. He is so funny. These dudes are weird is an all-time quote. For those of you who couldn't really make out what Malik told the crowd, the quote is, they were booing a little bit. I didn't like that, so I had to do something about it. I don't like that bleep. Like I said, they booed us. They helped us a bit. Boosted our energy, man. We need them for sure. Keep that energy up. Keep that energy up. Negative fuel too. We feed off that. Did you guys hear Malik say this at the time? Like, did you hear him address the crowd in that moment, or were you guys kind of busy at the time?
Yeah, no, definitely heard it. Definitely was a standout moment.
And
yeah.
What are you guys' thoughts on, I guess not necessarily, we'll put the fan aside, what do you think about Malik actually directly addressing that? Is that, we do fair or foul on this show, fair or foul to tell the fans directly they don't like the booing?
I think it kind of leans more towards foul just because the fact that, you know, Kings fans who sell out every single night, obviously they've one of the best home environments in the NBA.
Right.
All things considered with what's been going on this team, the inconsistency, the struggles at home, Like, the Kings are playing their best basketball on the road. I think a lot of fans that put their money in time into coming to these games feel a little frustrated. Yeah. And the fact that the Kings, at that time, the game was slipping away. Like, again, at that moment, to me, like, again, from you and me, Chris, we've gone into a lot of Kings games over the years. And a lot of fans have been doing the same thing. Like, in the moment, it was justified. Yeah. I mean, any sporting event you'll find around any sport ever, NFL, MLB, if a team is getting beat like that by a team way beneath them in the standings in a very important setting, you're going to hear some boos. People are going to be upset. And with Malik, obviously a fiery, passionate player, a guy who has been outspoken about this before. He said that, I think, a couple weeks ago or maybe a month ago, that he didn't like it, doesn't like being booed. And you're not supposed to like being booed. It's a bad thing. Like, you know, if you don't like it, I think a lot of fans are saying is, play better. And to that, I'd say, you know, there's some validity to it. Like, you have to play better. You have to win these games. You should win.
Right.
And this won't happen. But I think that fans are frustrated that the Kings are you know, losing to teams like the Pistons, the Hornets, and then the Spurs down by 8 with, I think, 5 minutes left. It wasn't looking good. And I think booing is a part of sports is kind of where I'm at. Like,
agreed.
I think that if you're booing a Kings team that is, you know, letting their foot off the gas and a 20-point lead turns into a 5-point lead with 5 minutes left and you're booing, it's like, okay, that's being a little ridiculous, right. But that doesn't happen. Usually in situations that booing happens,
right.
I think the last time we heard boos like this was maybe before the game Luke Walton got fired, I think, where they really...
Did they boo in Game 7? I was thinking about that right now.
No.
They didn't?
No.
Never
booing.
At any point in Game 7 they didn't boo?
That was more of like a celebration. Like, I think when the Kings were down big...
It was a lot of shell-shocking, too. It was a lot of people who were in their seats and couldn't make noise.
There were some groans with some of those offensive rebounds.
It turned into like a celebration of life. Like, they were clapping. They were clapping whenever, like, someone checked out for the last time. They were clapping, and the bench got emptied, and we were kind of like, just, okay, we're listening to the crowd kind of just give them...
I've blacked that out of my memory completely.
Give them their flowers. Yeah. I did, too. The end of Game 7... I know there wasn't boos because the boos, like, at this point, they do ring a bell. Like, they don't happen very often. When I remember I saw a couple media members scramble for their phones when the booing started. It's like, okay, well, this is probably the second time this has happened.
that's me.
A couple of, like, Matt George in front of us too was like, grab his camera. It was like, everyone was really trying to get it. And, like, you know, it doesn't happen very often. I think that's the main thing I take away from all this. It's not a commonality to hear booing at Golden 1 Center, but for a Kings team that's been struggling and inconsistent, with all things considered, it made sense at the time. I'm not sure how you guys feel. And again, I'm not going to tell anyone to fan how you want to fan.
Exactly.
That's my thing.
I think everybody's got their own individual take on it. Brendan, fair or foul?
And I think Malik's take is fine from a player's perspective. Like, I get why it's frustrating. You know, Malik's perspective, I'm sure, is like, we put so many hours into this.
That you guys
don't
see.
It's not a lack of trying.
Right.
But this is just how it happens. This is just how it works. And I think Frankie's point of so many underwhelming performances at home specifically, and all these huge wins seem to be on the road. If these are the same fans that are at the Charlotte game, at the Detroit game, at the Miami game, like, I get it. It's frustrating. And I think that is the moment there you expect boos.
Right.
Really. So, and Malik says post game that the boos actually fire him up a little
bit.
That's the point.
Exactly.
You know, so I get the player's perspective of why it's frustrating. I also think it's the nature of it. And personally, I wouldn't be saying anything. But Domantas Sabonis had something to say about it, too.
He sure did. And I don't think we're going to have time to play his audio, but essentially the gist of what he said, it was real short, real simple. He said, the boos, I try and ignore it. We're at home. I don't agree with that. I understand it. But we're here fighting for our city. And I understand that. I definitely understand how, from these guys' perspective, like you said, Brendan, they're in that gym every single day putting in work to try and make the city proud. Like, that is a real element of this team. Like, I don't think this is like the Lakers. I don't think the Lakers really think about the city of Los Angeles when they're out there playing. I think that this team really does take pride in the pride that this city takes in their team. And they like to see the city rally around the beam. They like to hear these guys going crazy in the Clippers crypto.com arena. I think they really love the passionate nature of this fan base, but you know, with the good of the passion also does come some of the bad. I won't say shortcomings, but I definitely think that it's just kind of part of the game, and I understand both sides, but at the end of the day, booing's going to happen. If you don't perform well, it's going to happen. It's not unique to the Kings, it's not unique to the NBA. It happens in just about every single sport. Coming up next in just a couple minutes, we're going to talk about Sam Amick, a good friend of the station. He released an article on The Athletic, really highlighting the Kings' up and down season, and he had some really interesting notes that you're not going to want to miss out on. Styles and Watkins right here, Sactown Sports 1140. Something we were just talking about in the break that, as we mentioned, we're going to talk about Sam Amick's article here in The Athletic. Something we were just talking about is, you know, when it comes to the booing, I think it's the thing that is just kind of on the player's side of the debate is when the Kings, I mentioned me and Frankie have obviously seen Kings games for years now, and booing isn't new. Those teams were really, really bad and deserve to be booed. I think the big obvious difference is this team is 36-26. They're a really good team, and it just so happens that the West is absolutely stacked, but that's what happens when there's a level of expectation. And again, that's a really big theme of what Sam Amick's article was about today in The Athletic. It's a great read. Definitely go over there and check it out. You won't regret it. He talks about the booing situation, definitely throws in some quotes there from Malik as well. Sam got a one-on-one with Malik before the game yesterday. But in here, Sam points out a very, very interesting alternate universe, I guess I'll say, for the Kings. He says, yet around this time, even with the reality that the Kings are a 13-7 finish down the home stretch to surpass their win total of last year, fans still find themselves in a place where they have frustrations. Let's just take a look at the list of clunkers. Wow, look at Sam, big word here. That caused consternation amongst Kings faithful. I hope I read that right.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, I'm not an English major. Some of the losses that the Kings have had this year that just are a bit inexcusable, and I went through the home losses specifically last time. Strap, you better, you know, get that seatbelt ready because this is going to be quite the roller coaster ride here of games. So please be ready. Consecutive losses at Houston early in the regular season. That was November 4th and 6th. A home loss to Portland, 130-113. I did not realize it was that big of a deficit. On December 26th, Merry Christmas. A loss to Charlotte, 111-104 on January 2nd. A loss to Philadelphia without Joel Embiid, 112-93 on January 12th. A loss to the Phoenix Suns without Bradley Beal. And a loss in which the Kings allowed the Suns to close out on a 23-4-1. A loss to Indiana with no Tyrese Halliburton or Pascal Siakam on January 18th. A home loss to Miami, 115-106 on the 31st of January. Loss to Detroit on February 7th. A loss to Miami on February 26th. And the loss to Chicago the other day on March 4th. Now, I say all of those games to say, I know that was a long list, now imagine a world in which the Kings won all of those games, Sam writes. The Kings would be one game behind the Boston Celtics, who are 48-14 for the best record in the league. Of course, Kings fans can dare to dream, but that sort of logic is nothing short of delusional. Every team has regrettable losses along the way. But when I heard or read that first from Sam Amick, that the Kings are those, because the thing is, yes, it is delusional to say if the Kings win all of those games, then we're the best team in the West. However, I will say those are all very, very winnable games. So hearing that, I don't know if this is the first time you guys have heard that, but when you hear all of those losses and where the Kings could potentially be if they would have taken care of just a little bit of that business, most of that business, what are your thoughts hearing that?
I mean, even half of those.
That's my exact thought.
You know, right. Half. Just give me half.
And that's not crazy.
No, because like Sam says also, every team is going to have some tough losses in here.
Yeah.
You know, you could go back just these last 3 days of the NBA and find a couple.
Yeah.
A couple really tough losses. Boston, best team in the league, blew a 22-point lead late because D-Wade became D-Wade. You know? Like, this happens throughout the league to even some of the best teams, but You take care of business in half of those, and the Kings are in a way better spot. They might be competing for that four spot with the Clippers. You know, like
even three of those games gives them a 2-game lead over the 6 seed. They'd be in a pretty comfortable spot as a 5 seed.
Yeah.
So
it's a season of missed opportunities.
And as you roll through them, it's just like, oh, yeah, that one was horrible.
I forgot about that one.
That one was horrible. I mean, the Milwaukee, it's the Bucks, but like they totally blew that game.
4-point lead with, I think, 30 seconds left.
Malik misses two free throws.
That one's not even on Sam's list.
That didn't even make Sam's list.
It is the Bucks, but they blew that game.
That's a blown game. 100%.
Two missed Malik free throws. Yeah. They don't take care of Dame on the inbound. Instead, they kind of double Giannis.
They let Brooke march down and hit a three in the corner, too.
That's
Brooke
right.
Lopez just ran down. They just literally in like the blink of an eye off a missed free throw.
Yeah.
That's what made it a one-point or a two-point game. So yeah.
Well, that's what Brooke does. We know that that's
you know,
what,
and you
that's
know
what
about
Brooke Lopez
Lopez
brings to the game. I mean, that was no surprise. So I don't know why you're trying to frame it like it was a surprise. Absolutely. And it makes me think, and I want to know your guys' perspective on this. I asked Whitey this a couple weeks ago in Crosstalk. Like, how do you balance the process in which these games have gone versus the results? And I more mean that for a game like last night, like where things have gotten to the point where, you know, result is the only thing that matters. But do you draw much from a performance last night? Like, do you draw a lot of negatives, more negatives from last night? Or are you taking that more as a positive that they did get the result? Because, again, that's... You could say that's what's ultimately important at this point in the season.
The negatives are still the negatives. Like, you're losing to these teams on this list, this horrible list, and then last night almost made another addition to it. But I think what is important to the fact that, okay, we can look at the Kings for this year now and know that when they're playing a shorthanded team, it is going to be either a bummer of a game or it's going to be a squeak. They're going to squeak out a win. But if they're playing the best of the best, for whatever reason, even with that Milwaukee game, they're going to be right there or they're going to win. And that kind of goes back into later in Sam's piece. I think we'll probably highlight it, but the records that the Kings have against those top four teams, 8-5 against the top four, like they win those games that they probably shouldn't win, quote unquote. But I think the good part of this is the Kings' schedule. They don't have many more of these games they can kind of go into and feel like, okay, we're playing the 15-49 Spurs without Wemby. They don't have any more of those games against the Pistons, or they have one against the Wizards, I think. So I guess circle that one on the calendar, folks, because they play the Wizards, but...
This
makes no sense.
I know. And we talked about this yesterday on the show. This team is better down 10. Like, you almost feel more comfortable when they're down 10 than up 10. And there's, like, that's another thing that's a little bit backwards with this team is that... Frankie, you're totally right. Like, I'm glad the Kings don't have many more games against the Spurs, against the Blazers, against, like, the worst teams in the league because I'm afraid they're not going to show up.
It's like, thank God they don't play the Pistons again.
It's
like, at a time
what
they,
in the world?
Where they really
Can
need
wins. Can
we
play wins? The Timberwolves more, please? Yeah. Like, come on.
We've been looking at strength of schedule backwards this whole time. This whole time. Higher strength of schedule, better
it's
odds for the Kings.
It
makes no sense. I will say for last night, like, the wording Mike Brown uses a lot is you'd rather learn
of
in
course,
a win.
Of course.
You know, you take the W because end of the day, your win-loss column changes by one number in one way or the other. And you want it to be that first number that it's improving instead of the second. And sure, you snuck away with a win, but the process was horrible. The defense, I can't get over the defense again recently. There was a run earlier in the year, I think when they were on a short losing streak, 4 or 5 games or so, where coach is talking about, our defense these last 5 games – bottom of the league. They're right near there again.
Yeah.
It's been really bad these last couple games. But putting up 130, 120.
That's the thing.
That's right.
They'll go, it's kind of like we're right back again. It's shocker.
Here we are.
Pretty much the same roster is going to go as far as their offense will take them.
Weird.
And
what do they say about insanity?
That definition has been haunting for a long time. And it could haunt them again this year.
Yeah.
I mean, again, their offense... still one of the best in the league. And when they're all firing on every cylinder, especially now when you add in the fact, and I put this out on Twitter, like the Kings have a possibility of being 9 players deep this year. And last year, they really were about 7 players deep because what they've been getting from guys like Keon Ellis and Davion Mitchell, they were not getting anything near that. Like the production from Davion Mitchell we've been seeing is the best in his career so far. Like I think over this last 10-15 game stretch, or maybe since the All-Star break, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but the 3-point shot, which was written about and reported about in the summer, it's there.
Yeah.
If you can have that same 7, that starting 5, then you have Trey Lyles and Malik Monk, then you can factor in a Davion Mitchell who can play defense and be a plus on offense, and Keon Ellis who you can call on, which the Kings have been calling on when Kevin Huerter's getting those teams across from the Kings are finding him on those switches. You can throw Keon Ellis out there who's a defender and can knock down 3. So I think if you have a roster that's 9 players deep, we're looking at a team that could maybe have a better postseason than last year. Even as crazy as things have been this year and as weird as the schedule is, as inexplainable as the wins or losses they have, they could still find themselves in a better position going into the postseason if they can get there.
Yeah, and that's a lot. You mentioned it, Frankie. That's kind of where Sam goes next in his article here, is talking about the Kings actually having the best record of the 5 through 10 seeds when playing the top 4 seeds in the West. The Kings are 8-5. That's a 6-15 win percentage, 2 wins against Minnesota, 2 wins against OKC, 3 against Denver, and then 1-2 against the Clippers. The Lakers are the second best team against those top 4. They're 7-6, just above 500. The Pelicans are at 500. They're 6-6. The Suns are 2-5 against those opponents, which tells me that the Phoenix Suns, for those of you who don't know, have a gauntlet the rest of this season. Yep. They have a brutal remaining strength of schedule. They have to play the top 4 seeds 6 more times before the end of this season. So that's going to be tough for them. Dallas Mavericks 3-5, 270 win percentage. And the Warriors, worst amongst the group, 2-12. And really all that tells me is that, like Frankie said there, the Kings in a weird way are almost better positioned this year. And I can't believe I'm saying that, because it feels like day by day on this show, we talk about, oh my gosh, all those hopes are over. But then you see something like this, and man, it just gives you a little bit of hope again. So, you know, the Kings, they will continue to just confuse us and shock us. But I think having a winning record against the best teams in this league is absolutely a major, major positive. Coming up next, we're going to switch things up just a little bit. We're still going to talk some basketball, but we're going to talk about Sasha Vezenkov first off, but also a EuroLeague legend who just stamped his name into the history book. Find out who we're talking about next right here, Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports 1140. Also, from the Sam Amick article we were just talking about in that last segment, this is a nice little snippet here that I definitely think people should hear. This is probably my favorite part of the entire article. Wolves forward Jaden Daniels, we talked about it earlier last week, said he felt, quote, pretty confident we could beat them 4 times in a row if we had to play them. Talking about the Sacramento Kings and Timberwolves meeting in the playoffs. Monk, who heard the comments, politely disagreed with McDaniel's view. He said, quote, the Timberwolves ain't won a playoff series since 2004, so I don't think they can talk. He continued, they're in the same boat as us, basically. They ain't won a playoff series. We ain't won a playoff series since 2004. So you really can't talk. Just him being a competitor, though. What were you guys' thoughts on Jaden Daniels in his statement? I thought the 4 in a row was crazy. I think it's one thing to say, yeah, I feel pretty good that if we play them in a series, we can win 4 games. That's just saying I have confidence in my team. Saying we are going to beat you 4 times in a row, there's no other way I can read that without just viewing it as straight disrespectful.
Especially like after losing 2 games at home.
That's a great point. Right.
To the Kings. It's like, I
think, weird time to flex.
Like Malik said, being a competitor, like heat of the moment. It was a very hard fought game, a tough game. Went to overtime, right? Yes. I think it went overtime. Yep. Yeah, tough game. Like, I mean, obviously, Kings got the best of you twice now in your house, and that was a tough game for a lot of reasons for Minnesota. But I mean, you don't want to give teams bulletin board material. I think that's one thing that I've learned watching sports over a long time. I'm sure you have too.
Yes.
Don't give teams bulletin board material because it backfires more likely than not. Yep. Like, I remember going to the Yankees, Aaron Judge was walking by the Red Sox locker room back when they won game 1, I think, in 2018, playing New York on a boombox, and the Red Sox just completely took over. They won the next 3 and they won the World Series. So.
And then I'm sure they played New York. Like, they did. I love New York.
That was their theme through their run to the World Series. They played New York. Like, when they won the ALCS against the Rays or Astros, they were playing New York. So don't give teams Baltimore material. That's all I'm saying. The Kings have had their number this year, and heat of the moment.
I feel like there was some other bulletin board material between Kings and Warriors last year that slipped in my mind, but I love this type of stuff from both sides. Like, McDaniels is supposed to be that confident, and, you know, Ant didn't play the second half. I forget who was out the first time that the Kings won that game in Minnesota. Exactly, Jaden McDaniels, so I get the confidence, and I also love Malik's response. We love a good self-aware King, you know?
Quite literally.
The 0-4, bring up the 0-4. I mean, it's true. It's true. What was the last? Was it Dallas? And then they lost to – no, they won the first round in 0-4, and then they lost to Minnesota, which is kind of funny.
They did lose to Minnesota, right.
And then they lost in 0-5 to Seattle. They lost in 0-6 to the Spurs. So, I think 0-4 was the first round last time they won against Dallas.
Interesting, and I think that's the year – so then Minnesota reached the conference finals that year as well.
What would you – Say they play. What's your series prediction?
Is Cat playing?
Yeah, we'll say Cat's playing.
Which, by the way, people are on Twitter. I mean, again, if you've been following the Karl-Anthony Towns news, he's going to be, I think, evaluated in 1 month after a meniscus surgery.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying that's very optimistic. A lot of people are saying, was there a new meniscus surgery? I think that's pretty on par, though. Maybe for a big guy, it's different. But if Karl-Anthony Towns is playing, I mean, does Minnesota come out on top? Like, I think every metric will say yes, but I think Kings at least are going to put up a fight.
Six or seven,
to me, at least seems on in my mind going to happen. Like, it's going to happen.
I mean, they've beaten them twice this year, and it hasn't looked like a fluke. They beat them without De'Aaron Fox. I know Anthony Edwards was out that second half, but I think the Kings have a lot of legs to stand on there.
And just to jump in and just say, is it possible? Minnesota right now is the number one seed. They have a half game lead over the Thunder, then the Nuggets right behind. Basically, the 1-3 in the West are going through what the 5-10 are in the West right now. If Minnesota were to go through a rough stretch and fall to 4, the Kings could climb to 5. They're one game back, and that could
be 3-6.
Or 3-6. That could be a first-round matchup. So really, it's possible. Like, I want to say, if the Kings make the top six, it's a pretty good percentage chance they play Timberwolves. But, I mean, I think we've long said that Minnesota's a tough matchup because of their length and because of what they can throw at the Kings, but for whatever reason, they played them well. Even if I'm not mistaken, the home game that they played, it was about, I think, 3 quarters or 2.5 quarters of good competition before they went away, or they ran away with it late. But
they didn't have Cat in that one.
They didn't. But this isn't, to me, it's not like, you know, a shut and put away case here. Like, I think that this is up for discussion, that Minnesota would not dominate a series against the Kings. I think it'd be a good series. Could eat my words if this happens, but I just think it'd be a good series.
No, to Malik's point too, like, it's not like the Timberwolves are oozing with experience either. Like, those guys, I know they have the infamous Pat Bev throwing his shirt and hopping on the scores table, but really since then, like, they've have been a first round exit, you know, when they've been in the playoffs. So it's not really like they have some great advantage over the Kings in terms of experience. And that's why I think a lot of people are saying Minnesota and OKC, those are their first two options when it comes to who they want to line up with in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where I'd go to before. I was a little hesitant on Minnesota, but I think the Kings can score against that team. And Minnesota's a team that's all about their defense, but I think the Kings can find a way to score. I think Domas does an okay job of Gobert.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a matchup where it'd be tough for somebody like Davion, because, say, Cat gets put on Domas, and then all of a sudden Gobert is hiding on Davion and just gets to free roam. So there'd be some complications, but I do like those. I do like those two matchups. I think at least between the four options that we're really talking about here, and I don't think the Kings would be favored at any, but I'd probably say they'd go down like 4-2. Yeah. You know, it'd be fitting to lose it at home.
Yeah, and I.
Quick side note: over the past 20 years, Minnesota has a one game lead in playoff wins. Minnesota's won 4 playoff games over the past 20 years. The Kings have won 3. So.
20 years is insane.
20 years, the 03-04 season.
Gosh,
which,
funny, my goodness.
That, I mean, again, not to open up old wounds, but Weber, open shot, that was one that I think gets buried, rightfully so, the chance to send it to overtime. But I cried for that one,
tough times.
I think. I cried for that one as well. I was 9.
Yeah.
So. That one hurts. Yeah. The thing I wanted to switch it over and still talk basketball, but kind of get a little bit off of the Kings here. Mike James, who, you know, some people might be out there and be saying, who? No, not Mike Jones. Mike James just passed, now please excuse me on this pronunciation, Vasilis Spinoulis as the EuroLeague's all-time leading scorer. I only say this because I know me and Brendan, and actually Frankie as well, definitely have watched a lot of EuroLeague basketball, whether it's Bogdan Bogdanovic and before he came over, or Sasha Vezenkov this past season. Mike James is, I mean, I don't really know if there's a good NBA comp, but essentially, I mean, he is the Michael Jordan of EuroLeague. Like, when he plays, he's a bucket out there. He is an absolute bucket out there. And the funny thing to me is, he played 2 seasons of NBA basketball, played a combined 49 games. He scored just under 9 points per game, shot 38% from the field, 28% from 3. And it just had me thinking when I saw this, and it can definitely tie in with how we've seen Sasha play this year, how significant really do you think that gap is between EuroLeague and the NBA?
It's huge.
It's pretty significant, yeah.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. Like, Mike James is very solid, and I think there's some guys that, you know, if he came back to the NBA, I think that he would have carved out a larger role in the NBA in time. But these quick guards, man, like Shane Larkin,
Right.
Balled out. I'm pretty sure he has a EuroLeague MVP from what I remember. Mm-hmm. And these are just the type of guys that do really well. Tyler Dorsey is somebody that played with Sasha. He played with Isaiah Cannon
Isaiah Cannon,
a little while.
Chima
as
Moneki.
Well. Yeah, these guys do really well over there. So it's definitely – it's a different style and a different speed. And shout out Mike James for making Spanoulis Spoldless.
That's the thing. The game speed is different.
That was terrible, Brandon.
I tried,
that was so bad.
I was going to kind of move by.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
I didn't want to give it any attention.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Impressive, though.
Yes.
Impressive. Alan needs to be here to hear that. He probably would have – I don't know if he would have loved it or hated it, but –
you can do both.
Different game speed. So wait, so if he's the GOAT – is he the GOAT of EuroLeague? Are we saying that? Because
I feel like it's like Marbury in China,
He was China. I think Jimmer Fredette went off in China as well.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
I'm trying to think who else from the NBA was just a complete bucket overseas, and it's I can't really remember right now.
Yeah, off the top of my head.
I mean,
there's examples of like guys coming the other way, like Sasha, obviously. Bielitsa was a EuroLeague MVP. Miritich played well. I think he started overseas, came to the U.S., and then went back to Barcelona, won a EuroLeague MVP his first year over there.
That's right.
Like, I've always thought if Trey Lyles was in Sasha's role last year, Trey might flirt with that MVP.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
and that's not a knock on Sasha.
You know? No, it's not. Yeah.
That's
it's
just
not.
Like, there are levels to this, though, I think. And that whole discussion, I know we got to go. Yeah. That whole discussion, though, with the world champion, what does that mean for NBA? It's like, I really think you could get any team from the EuroLeague.
I forgot that was a conversation.
And that's what I just expect. You can get any team from the EuroLeague to play the Detroit Pistons or the Washington Wizards. And I'm telling you, it's going to be a trap.
It's not going to happen, so quit asking.
It's going to be
even ugly. Sasha said it. Even Sasha said it.
Right.
He's like, it's different.
He's like laughing. He's like, yeah, it's the best league in the world.
Yes. Real quick, give me one player who you think would you said Trey Lyles. Give me a player that you think would absolutely cook in Europe.
De'Aaron Fox.
Okay. a non-starter that you think would absolutely cook, and don't say Malik Monk.
I don't know about cook, but I think Alex Len, if you were to put him in the EuroLeague, would just be like a Rudy Gobert type, like 16 point, 12 rebounds, 2 blocks type guy. Like,
love it.
Can you imagine JaVale doing just crossover hook shots?
He'd look like, didn't Dwight Howard have a game in Taiwan where he shot took like 23s? Yeah, that's what JaVale.
But in all seriousness, before we go, I'm just saying this is why the EuroLeague is special for those kinds of guys that maybe are kind of in the back nine of their careers. Right. They can go over there and just make a difference and have a whole other half of their career. Like, and just keep going. So.
And marketing, too. It's crazy.
And make money.
I'll shout out Terrence Davis, too. I think he'd ball out.
TD. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Yeah, we got to hit a break here. Mike James, I will say, once had 18 points against the Sacramento Kings when he was on the Phoenix Suns. So I thought that was an interesting note. Frank, I think you're heading out here. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you. Coming up here, we're going to hit the top of the hour. We're going to preview the Houston Rockets. That game's on Sunday. And then don't miss out at 12:15. The Athletics' Anthony Slater will be joining us to talk some Sacramento Kings basketball and some wide picture NBA Western Conference talk. You're listening to Styles and Watkins right here, Sactown Sports 1140.